Yeah, hello everyone. So it's a great pleasure to immerse into, well, learn a lot about some real theory this week here. This is really fascinating. And so I would like to tell you a little bit about our baby steps, essentially, how we can, with ultra-cold atoms, how we can actually now measure entanglement entropy directly. And so it took me a bit of a surprise, actually, that this is possible. Essentially, once we figured out that we can measure the purity of a state, then that opens the possibilities for all these kind of things. And so this is what I will tell you in this talk. Let me start telling you a little bit about what ultra-cold atoms are. We can use atoms at extremely cold temperatures to assemble essentially artificial quantum system. It's actually pretty amazing. Our temperatures can be as low as in the picokelvin range, which is about 14 orders of magnitude colder than room temperature. So it is just as cold as the LHC is hot, essentially. But why do we need that, and why is that interesting? You would think everything is at standstill at those cold temperatures. Well, it's quite the opposite. It's because the atoms behave quantum mechanically then, and it's really the atoms as a whole that form a quantum gas, like electrons in a solid otherwise, or things like that. And because they're heavier and bigger, and the spacings are bigger, because of that, the de Broglie wavelength, or the thermal de Broglie wavelength, also has to be bigger. Okay, and bigger means slower, colder. And that's why the atoms need to be so cold, because we really have an enlarged model system, essentially, a very clean model system to study many-body quantum mechanics. And there are many different things that we can play with that. For example, in recent years, we've played a lot with optical lattices. So this is kind of the atoms moving in the lattice are mimicking electrons or Cooper pairs moving in an ion crystal. Then we're also able to make superfluids, for example, across BCS-BC crossover spin systems. Recently, we were able to do the first quantum phase transition of a magnetic model in ultra-cold atoms. And so there are many other areas of active research. People try to, for example, with fermionic atoms, you really have the chance to get to models. This is the case here already, where it's hard to calculate. There are many other topics that the field tries to move into, and so it's really it's a fun game to develop these new tools that really provide you with a really clean quantum system. Now, it's not only clean, and what's very nice typically is that it is is pretty much exactly described by a simple Hamiltonian, so it's much right, but it's not only clean, it's also controllable. So we developed a quantum gas microscope where we can image all the individual atoms in an optical lattice, for example. So in real, it looks like this. Here's a little lens in a vacuum chamber. So the gas is in the vacuum. We create this cold gas inside this vacuum. And then in the focus of this lens, there's a microscope objective on the outside then. That allows us to image the atoms, and amazingly be able to hold on to the atoms well enough to really detect all the individual atoms. And of course that is a dream come true, because in condensed matter physics, imagine you could actually take a snapshot of all the electrons in the material. That would be fantastic. But in the, of course with the electrons it's not possible. I mean, you can do STM with atomic resolution, but here we can really turn off time evolution and take a snapshot of all the particles with 99.9 or so percent fidelity. This is the simple sketch. In real, the experiments look more like this. So there are hundreds of mirrors and laser beams all through the lab, but it's still tabletop. It still fits onto 2 to 3 optical tables. And so the pictures we take of the atoms are look like this. So here you see a snapshot of 10,000 ultra-cold atoms, right? And if you zoom in, you can see that, yes, these atoms are, in fact, arranged on a grid. This is the optical lattice. Our atoms, for example, can be in the lowest band of an optical lattice, and if you just use bosonic atoms in the lowest band of an optical lattice, then they are perfectly described by the famous Bose-Hubbard model. So the simplest that bosonic particles can do in a lattice is, of course, they can tunnel between neighboring lattice sites, and they can interact with pure on-site interaction, meaning that only if two atoms are on the same site, that raises the energy. So very simple on-site interaction. We can tune the ratio between these two tunneling, between the kinetic energy term and the interaction, and by changing that, we can derive a quantum phase transition, from a superfluid to a mod insulator, for example. So that's the simplest case, but this is also the case that I will be talking about today, where we then measure entanglement entropy. Okay. And so what you get, as I said, you can do a quantum phase transition from a superfluid to mod insulator, and if you watch this in the microscope, you can see directly in the superfluid, each atom is delocalized over the entire cloud, essentially. And so you would, if you then take a snapshot, you would find strong fluctuations, whereas in the mod insulator, each atom is localized to a lattice site, and then you see, like for example, exactly one atom per site here, and that's what we also find in the snapshots. Okay. Now we did these experiments a few years back, but recently we were wondering, could we put this? We also saw we could, in principle, do pretty large clouds and things like that. But we were interested in, could we really, instead of just making a periodic optical lattice, could we really design arbitrary potential landscapes? Could we really make a microscopic pattern, microscopic shapes, arbitrary? So the lattices are typically produced by interfering laser beams, so you get a strictly periodic pattern. But actually, in our experiments, we already create a lattice by projecting slides, essentially. And so the idea was then, if we could really create very precise light patterns, so optical lattice, right, the atoms are held by light, could we make very microscopic, very small light patterns that are really precise, right? And so we found a way to do this using a spatial light modulator as a hologram. Spatial light modulator are these, it's a bit empty. Spatial light modulators are, would anyone have a laser pointer by chance? What's this one? So can we this hologram is created by a so-called spatial light modulator. These are exactly the kind of chips, little flip mirrors, chips that are inside video projectors. And use them as a hologram to then create a very precise light pattern. I can't go into detail. You have to play many tricks because these patterns here, for example, the intensity between these blobs here has to be precise to better than one part in 1,000 or sometimes even one part in 10,000. That's not what you normally get, but we were able to engineer that, and this is now enabling us to do the kind of experiments that that I'm talking about, that we can create microscopic light pattern. Also, the spacing between them is only on order of the wavelength. Okay, so these are tiny microscopic light pattern, very well controlled, and this enables us now to do the physics that I will be talking about. Okay, so for example, we can use this to, let's start with the big mod insulator. The actual mod insulator is much bigger. We can fill it with about 99% fidelity, okay, so very low entropy system. And then we can go ahead and here, in multiple steps, we cut out a system of, for example, 2x4 lattice sites. And we don't only cut it out, like cutting out means that we ramp from a lattice to a double well, and then all these other atoms disappear, they just fly away. And then we also ramp, for example, here into a four-site potential, okay? And, right, and then all these other atoms are flying away, but they don't just fly away. We really have now, we have created a potential here where these atoms are still in the ground state of this potential. Okay. And then we can start and changing parameters. For example, we can lower this potential again, then atoms tunnel, and then we can create a four-side superfluid, like start with a known fixed atom number, right? Like four sides on four lattice sides, fixed atom number. We can melt this mod insulator into a superfluid. Those are the kind of states we are investigating. Okay. But you can already see, we can also create, so these could be considered as two copies of these four-side systems. And having two identical copies that are initialized with zero entropy, that's key to, for what I will be talking about. Okay. So, entanglement, well, I don't have to tell you what entanglement is. In our field, most people only saw entanglement in the context of, like, Bell pairs or things like that, and then I have to tell them now that, well, there's a very nice way to think about entanglement in itinerant many-body systems, and this is bipartite entanglement. So if you have two subsystems, then if the system is in the product state of the two, it can either be in a product state or an entangled state. And we have an example right here, actually, that applies to us. If you have a mod insulator, exactly one atom in each side, then there's no entanglement, or we wouldn't expect there to be entanglement. But as soon as you melt this mod insulator towards the superfluid, you would expect entanglement to arise. And that's what we can study here. Okay. So the idea of the entanglement entropy is, of course, if you trace over one subsystem now, so let's say the whole system is pure initially, then we trace over a subsystem, then in this part here, we would turn the pure state into a mixed state to the extent that we have entanglement, right? And then we can quantify this with the second order Renyi entropy, with Renyi entropy in general. So if what we would need to do is, if we could measure the purity directly, then we could directly measure the second order Renyi entropy, because this would be trace of rho square. Okay, but how could we measure purity in the cold atom systems? And what comes to our right, so if you have a pure state, then this would be a product state. If it's a mixed state, then it's an entangled state. So how could we measure purity? And what comes to our help there were some ideas that were actually already thrown around a number of years ago by Dieter Jaksch and co-workers, and then Andrew Daly has a more recent, more concrete proposal on this. The idea is in our field, we would maybe call this a generalized Hongo-Mandel interference, or I'm actually now thinking more about it as many-body quantum interference, essentially. Let me tell you the way I'm thinking about it, coming from quantum optics, essentially. In quantum optics, everyone knows this very famous Hongo-Mandel experiment, which says that if you have a beam splitter and you send two photons onto a beam splitter, then they have they interfere in a way that you will always get a superposition of both photons going this way and both photons going this way. And you will never find one photon here and here. This has been shown with two individual photons and some extended schemes since a while. Okay. Now, the first question, can we do this with our cold atoms? In fact, we can. Our beam splitter is a double well. So if you prepare one atom on one side of a double well and you let it tunnel, then it would oscillate back and forth. It would rabi-flop between the two sides. And if you do the rabi-flop exactly to this point here, like half a rabi-flop, then if the atom is initially left, the atom would afterwards be left minus I right. If it's right, then it would be left plus I right. Okay. And if you put this together, so if you start in this state and then each atom is delocalized over the two sides, then you would find that these odd these odd outcomes would cancel out. Right? This is very simple math. And exactly what you would find with photons here, we would find here, namely, we start with 1, 1, we get a superposition of both atoms being left and both atoms being right. Okay. So let's try this in the experiment. And when we tried this, we were very pleased that we were able to realize this with very high fidelity. Here I'm showing data with 96%. Recently we have increased this up to 98% fidelity. Contrast here. So we have this coherent oscillation back and forth between one atom on a double well, 1, 1, to 0, 2 plus 2, 0. 1, 1, 0, 2 plus 2, 0. And with a microscope we can measure that directly. Okay. Okay, so what this is really measuring in a way is, are these really indistinguishable photons? If they are, then I get only two particles afterwards. But so I'm measuring how identical are the particles are here. But the idea is now to extend this to how identical are quantum states, are many-body quantum states. What would happen if I send two many-body quantum states onto a beam splitter? Right. And so this, I guess you can tell already, this is what a lot of you have thought about in terms of swap operator. This is very similar. What happens if I send many body states on there? It turns out that now the information is in the parity here. And for example, if I have two particles on each side of the double well, then afterwards I could in principle get all these different combinations. But it turns out that these odd ones cancel. They only get even ones out, right? So the generalizations, this Hongel-Mandel, is instead of 0, 2 to 0, you get really now a superposition of all of these even outcomes, and that's what we find experimentally. So again, too many body states here, you send them onto a beam splitter, the odd ones cancel, and only where you find even particle numbers survive here, and this this can easily be proven via looking at the swap operator and showing that if these states are indistinguishable, then you only have states in the symmetric subspace, which will then give rise to only even numbers on both sides. I don't have time to go to this in detail, but I can show you afterwards. Okay, but this is beautiful because this means that I can actually So if it's indistinguishable, if these are identical, then it's even, parity always, okay? But this also means if I now repeat the experiment and I measure my average parity here, okay? The parity defined here as 1 if it's even, minus 1 if it's odd, and 0 if it's either even or odd randomly, okay? So if I repeat the measurement over and over, then what I get is the quantum state overlap. This expectation value of parity is equal to the to trace of row 1, row 2, okay? And if those are identical, if I prepare two identical states, then it's just trace of row square, okay? So parity equals purity. It's that simple, essentially. So we found a way to measure purity by many-body quantum interference, essentially, okay? Now, if I can do that, great. Then I can measure the purity of my complete system, and then I can also trace over a subsystem and measure the purity of the remaining system. Okay, so that's what I need to measure entanglement entropy. And it turns out this is actually possible in a very elegant way. So here, as I showed you earlier, we can prepare two mod insulators with four lattice sites each, here and here. And then we can melt them into a superfluid, for example. So it's a bit hard to see here, but now the atoms are delocalized. And here they are localized, right? And so you can adiabatically melt this into a state with exactly four particles, but with number of fluctuations. Okay, so we prepare these two independent systems. By the way, that's important. They really have to be independent. There can be no phase correlation between them. But if you have fixed numbers, then that's automatically the case. But that's why we first make a mod insulator. And then, what you would expect, if you cut them here, you would expect this is a product state, and this is an entangled state. Okay. So let's see how we can do this in practice. What we can do is, these mod insulators, we can turn off the tunneling vertically, and then we turn on the tunneling horizontally in a double well here, just as I showed you before. And well, this data I more or less showed you already, right? When I showed you the Hong-Mandel interference, this is the simple case of just having one particle left, one particle right, if it's the Mott insulator of this kind. So I get a superposition of 0 and 2 everywhere after the beam splitter operation. And if I measure the number, then I get, I might find 2 here, or 2 here, 0 there, okay? But always 0 or 2 on each lattice side, okay? Now, in this superfluid, of course, this is not the case anymore. In fact, if you have epsilon tunneling, like if the atoms start to delocalize, then these numbers change here, right? So, one more thing, how I can interpret this is, I can actually multiply the parity of these individual systems, and then if I multiply all of these, I find the total numbers even here, so that means globally I have a pure state, okay? But locally, I also have, for whatever subsystem I choose, I also have even number, so locally I also have a pure state. It's a bit trivial here, but this is the... But in the superfluid now, it's not as trivial anymore, because I might get outcomes like this. I get very complicated superpositions here, and if I then measure the number, I might find a measurement like this. If I now look locally, it could be odd or even, right? So this is a mixed state. But if I multiply the parity for each lattice side here, along one line, on one side, okay, then I should find that globally I still should have even atom numbers. Okay? And this means that globally I still have a pure state. So the amazing thing is I do this measurement, and then I can predict the outcome of the last measurement. I know if I, well, if these were even so far, then the last one must also be even. Or if these ones were odd so far, then the last ones also must be odd, okay? So this is the non-trivial part here, is that, locally, you now can get even or odd, no surprise, but globally, you still have to get even, and if you do so, then you have shown that you still have a pure state globally, okay? Okay, and this would prove that's entangled. If it's locally mixed, but globally pure, that's entangled, okay? So let's look at the data if we do this. As I said, we can measure the purity directly because it's simply the expectation value of the parity of a certain subsystem or global system. And then I can also directly plot the Rényi entropy because here S2 is just minus log trace of the purity. Okay, and if I do this, if I just look at the total parity on the right side here, for example, then I find, and here I start with the Mott insulator and then I melt it into a superfluid. So this is the tunneling strength here, okay? And this the interaction strength in units of tunneling. So here this is strongly interacting, weakly interacting. So as I go from a Mott insulator to a superfluid, the complete purity doesn't change much, so the complete entropy doesn't change much. It's not zero, of course, because I have experimental errors, finite temperatures, things like that. But if I now look at a subsystem, for example, only this half of the system, then I see how the Rényi entropy increases as I go to a superfluid. Okay. Or, in other words, globally, my state is more pure globally than locally. Okay. And so this directly shows me that I have entanglement, that these two subsystems are entangled. Okay. Of course, I can choose other cuts, like here, for example, if I just look at one side, this might look like this. Okay. In fact, for these four sides, there is a total of 14 ways how I can cut my system. And the beautiful thing is with this measurement, I get all this information at the same time because I just measure the individual parities and afterwards I just multiply them all to get all of these different possible partitionings. And you see that, they have very characteristic, they all look a bit different. In particular, I can show that whatever cut I do, I find that globally I have a more pure state than locally, or the entropy is lower globally than for any other subsystem. And that means that everything is entangled with everything. So if I understand this correctly, this even tells me that this is multipartite entangled. It's not just bipartite, because if it was, otherwise this wouldn't be the case. Otherwise, you would find some partitioning where it's not entangled. Right. Now, what else do we see here? I mean, all of these, they should look different, actually. They are not the same, right? One thing we see is that this is grouped in three here, and these are the ones where, so this is the global system. This is where the system contains three sites. The blue ones here, this is where it contains two sites. This is where it contains one site. This is on the MOD side here, and you can see, of course, this entropy is not extensive. So for, depending on the system side, if I have a thermal component and my measurement error is, I can also consider as this a thermal component, then it grows with the size, okay? So this is a bit of a limitation. Of course, we can make the measurement error smaller. We can decrease the initial entropy, things like that. But of course, one thing that we can also nicely do is we can just look at the mutual information, because this would be extensive then, and those effects should cancel. Because what that means is that I would add up the entropy of the two subsystems, and if one has one, then the other one has three sites. So this amount of entropy should be the same. And in fact, if I plot the mutual information here, which is just SA plus SB minus SAB, okay? So this is SAB here, this is S, I should mention that these lines are actually exact diagonalization. And these are the data points. Then we can plot the mutual information. And you see, nicely, depending on how we cut, this should look different, and it does look different, so we clearly see the differences here. For example, if we cut only one side off here, A, then it looks like this. If we cut in the middle, this is the highest possible entropy for one cut, if we cut into two equal systems. Or I can also cut ABAB here, so I have multiple cuts. This gives more entropy, because in fact, if I look, what's the boundary area of my cut here? then I see that the mutual information would grow with that boundary area. Of course, in principle, we could look at scaling and so on. With the four-site system, there's only one and two, right? So these are only two data points. And we see a difference, but of course, we would have to make it a bit bigger system. And then the question is, of course, how much bigger can we make it? I'm not sure yet. I mean, it's pretty promising, I find, these error bars and things like that, that we could actually look at larger systems, in particular if it's sufficient to do mutual information. But of course, it will scale somehow exponentially, I guess. But I mean, these are really just first tries. If you really build an experiment optimized for that, I would think that you could decrease the measurement error by a factor of 10 or so. You should also increase the repetition rate, because, I mean, if you have built an experiment that can make a Bose-Einstein constant of a million atoms, and then we work very hard to reduce a million to 8. So if you optimize for an experiment that makes small atom numbers but much faster, that would be very nice for these kind of experiments. But if you do all of this, I would hope that you can really get this to be quite useful. Also, you can do quench, of course. This was adiabatic, right? You can do quench. This, for example, is a two-site quench where we start with 1-1, and if we then quench, then we get a periodic oscillation. We start here, then we get a state equal amplitude of all three possibilities that has maximum entropy, right? If you trace over 1, it's equally likely to have 1, 2, or 0. That's as entropic as you could be. And then here, this is 0,2 plus 2,0, this again, and then we find that we get back to a MOD insulator here. This is, the entanglement entropy of the global system and entanglement entropy of one side. Mm-hmm. So in general, for quenches, this will, of course, would be very nice. We can also do this. We are currently discussing, could we do many-body localization? Maybe if you do 8, 10, 12 sites, something like that, is that maybe enough to do many-body localization? I would love to hear from you what you think, if this could be maybe enough if one does the right thing. This kind of thing. So I showed you how we do this entanglement entropy with bosonic atoms in a lattice. There are many more ideas. One idea, for example, is to do it with fermionic atoms. This scheme, this can be extended in a straightforward way with fermions. It's a bit more complicated, not just the parity, you have to do a little bit more, but you have all the information to extract that for fermions. Also spin degrees of freedom. In fact, these are itinerant bosons. If you just, you can add a spin degree of freedom, you can also not allow them to tunnel, and then you're back at your typical localized spin models, and you could do all the same with that too. So that's just like what people consider with the qubits, localized spins. There's only a special case of what we can do here, essentially. But these are really itinerant. The nice things that we can really have itinerant systems. In fact, we just finished building a fermion quantum gas microscope. So these are the first pictures of lithium atoms. These are fermions in a quantum gas microscope. And so we're optimistic to do experiment. Give us a little bit time, but we're optimistic. Hmm? So these are individual lithium atoms. This is position. In this case, it's not spin, but we have developed ways to measure the spin too, so we can also measure spin
at the same time.
Yeah, at the same time, mm-hmm. with the same fidelity. Yes, and I would love your input for. We are also thinking about creating fractional quantum Hall states, small atom numbers like 4, 6, 8, 10 particle numbers, in a rotating puddle, where the interaction is strong and the gap is still reasonably large. It would be fairly straightforward to do two of those, once we can do that, it would be fairly straightforward to do two of those in adjacent pancakes and then do a beam splitter between them so you could measure the purity. But I'm wondering, it's a continuous, you could also do time of flight and then recapture this in a lattice. It's of course continuous space, so what happens if you recapture this in a lattice on a, would it be useful to then extract entanglement entropy to look at topology or so? So these are ideas that we start to think about. And we also start discussing a lot, what does this mean for these itinerant system entanglement, right? There are interesting consequences of, superselection is very important here, right? Superselection rules. How does this compare to spin entanglement, what we are normally more familiar with? And so we came across some questions that I think also link to things in other fields. For example, is this mode entanglement we are looking for the same as what you normally consider entanglement in Bell pairs? And it's a bit more complicated actually, because you have to look: is the second introducing second quantization? What does that mean? What does that do to your Hilbert space, and how do you think of it? The current understanding is that it is certainly related, but you have to consider variance and entanglement. Okay, we can talk about it afterwards if you want. Also, this many-body interference, of course, this is only one. Looking at entanglement entropy is only one thing. We could do other things. It's really measuring the state overlap between two many-body quantum states, as I told you. So now you could also, for example, measure operator correlation functions, or I don't know. I would love to hear, especially if you are doing numerics or what kind of things are you doing in your computer that you could maybe do here by measuring these operator correlation functions or so. Because if you have specific questions, maybe there are other things that are give us even more direct answers than looking into entanglement entropy. Okay. Thank you very much for your attention. And I would like to thank my students in particular. So the work I was talking about was done by these guys. Ratibul Islam is the postdoc, and these are the graduate students. Thanks a lot for your attention.
Thank you. Questions?
So by making two copies of your system, you were able to measure the second Renyi entropy. I suppose if you made three copies, you could measure the third one and so on?
Yes, that's right. So we would make three copies, and what we would then have to do is to do a Fourier transform, right? Like this beam splitter in a double well is a Fourier transform between two systems, essentially. And what we would need to do for n copies, for the nth order Renyi entropy, is a Fourier transform in this lattice. I think for three this would still work, but for n, let's say, this might be a bit hard. I don't know of an easy way to do that, except there might be things like, I mean, time of flight is kind of a Fourier transform, right? So there might be tricks one could do. It's not the most direct way to do, but I hope that we get pretty far by just looking at second order Rainey entropy.
Okay. Over here. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So can you go to higher dimensions, and if so, how high?
up to four. So, okay, but that would take a little bit extra effort. So the so we did 1D here. It is straightforward to extend it to 2D. Then you have two layers, right? For 3D, you have to be a bit more creative, but people have actually done something like interlaced lattices. So you could think of having to extend it to 3D, where the atoms of the two copies live in between the other ones. And it's actually not. I mean, it's not what I would want to do tomorrow, but it would be conceivable. And recently, there was quite some nice work with synthetic dimensions, like if you have. If you have atoms that have many spin states, like 10, 20 spin states, then you can just use that as a finite size additional dimension, essentially. So it's not easy, but in principle, I mean, 2 would be hard enough for now.
to extend it to 2. Just going from 1 to 2?
That is quite realistic. I think it's more the system size than the dimension. I think, let's say, I hope soon to go from four to 16 or so. But it would actually not make a big difference if they were 16 on a row or 4x4. Would actually be comparable in complexity.
So previously there was a proposal a few years ago to measure S2 using this kind of swap of. Two systems. So how does this approach compare to that?
Mean by Abane and Demler?
Right.
Did say somewhere? I think. It's a different idea. There you have an additional. So I couldn't think yet of a way to realize that, to find a realistic kind of switch, a quantum switch that does that. But it would actually be interesting to discuss which one might scale better or which one is more. I don't have the feeling that it scales better, whereas on the other hand, in this system you get more information at the same time because you get all the different partitionings. The other system might be easier to apply for other kind of systems, like maybe some qubit circuits in some other condensed matter. So I'm not sure, but maybe.
Question.
So it seems it's essential to have these two systems which are identical, right? So that you can translate the entropy to observable, which is the parity. Mm-hmm. So is there a way to check how identical are these two systems?
How identical?
Yeah, how different they are, like what is the...
I mean, our best check is exactly our purity measurement, right? If you just look at the, how pure the system is, how pure the system is for the complete system, then this gives us an upper bound, a lower bound for our system is at least that pure, okay? So in this case, for the four sides, about 0.6 or so. In reality, it will be even a bit more pure because this is also affected by measurement error, but it gives you a nice bound already. And otherwise, what we know that we can initialize this mod insulator, if you optimize it really up to 99% real-world performance for taking this data, more like 96, 97% filling factor.
Mm-hmm. So if you are able to measure the overlap between two wave functions, it seems like you can also do something like this. So you hit the wave function 1 at time 0 and hit the wave function 2 at time different from 0. And this way you can get the unequal time correlation function. It's this trivial thing to do in your setup.
So you mean between the two copies, have the two copies evolved to a different time, for
example? Different time.
Yeah, that would be possible, in particular in Quench. I mean, you have to define time, right? So for Quench experiments, so is that what you're thinking about? Right, you could certainly do a Quench where the Quench starts earlier in one system and then in the other. And then you could interfere them and calculate and measure the many-body wave function overlap. Yeah.
Thank you.
Sorry, I did not follow the question. Answer to you, to the question of Shaoliang, that isn't it purity? So the if I look at trace rho square, I thought that's measuring whether how pure the overall system is. So if there is some coupling to heat bath. That's pure. But there's a separate question whether the two copies are identical.
Oh, identical, sorry.
That was the, because it, gotcha. It could be that system is fully pure, but you probably need exponential sensitivity in, if there's a slight difference in how, so do we know
how we can measure that independently, you mean? I mean, what this is really doing is trace of row 1, row 2, right? And meaning that it either shows it's pure or it shows, I mean, it shows you how pure and identical it is. And if it's not totally, if this is not 1, then it's either not pure or not identical, right? So it's already contained, luckily, right? Because it can only make this purity less, lower. How do we independently check that? I think at this point, mostly through like sanity checks, kind of like making sure that we try to understand our system, but we don't have an independent measure. I haven't really thought about it, but I don't think we have an independent measure to measure just how identical, but not how pure it is. But that makes, But we can make sure, I mean, from other experience, we can make sure that the two systems behave themselves, behave the same. you can do other measurements on the two systems without the beam splitter and make sure that they do the same thing, for example. The number of defects should be symmetric. If you average over many shots, the defects should be equally distributed and not in one copy they always appear on one side and the other copy they appear on the other side. Or so we have done a couple of checks like that.
I think it's time to retire to the posters and reception. So let's give Marcus a wonderful hand for a wonderful talk.